This is Whitney, and you're listening to the JCast on Jabberlog.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
What's going on? This is Ricardo with Jabberlog on the JCast, and I'm sitting here with my co-host Whitney, and this is episode number 13 of Within the Trenches. What's going on?
Hey, man. Welcome back.
Oh, yes. It's been a full, well, I'd say a full week, but it's really been since last Friday.
But, it's only been a couple of days.
Yeah, it has. And, you know, last time when I was here, we were talking about springtime and how it looked, great out there. And then we played a tape where those bees swarmed that guy, poor dude. And now look at it outside. It was almost a whiteout at the time when I was coming over here. And I missed your driveway again for the second time. And I look behind me. I was like, no, I got enough time. I can just whip it around here. But no, there was this truck coming.
Because they come over that hill and they catch you off guard, don't they?
Yeah, and this one that was in back of me, I didn't see it at first. I was paying attention to trying to get into, trying to find a way to get back into your driveway. And he's coming up fast, so I started burning out. And I went and turned over at that Sycamore place right there again. And so another time. But then I come in here and apparently you have a ghost in your house or something. I don't know what it is for. Okay, we're here recording within the Wiz compound once again.
I didn't choose my last name. I married into it.
Yeah. But I walk in, I start setting everything up, and Whitney and I are talking, and her door just opens up out of nowhere. And I swear to you, it sounded like somebody opened it.
And then it just kind of did that.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, what is going on?
I kind of jog over there. I'm like, it's okay. It does that sometimes.
Yeah, geez. So no, it happened twice. And the other time it happened was when our guest was already here. And so this week, as we can jump right into this episode, we have Matt, the operations manager at Kent County Communications Center. What's going on, man?
Matt. Not a whole lot.
So what did you think about the door thing?
Yeah. Well, I thought that maybe somebody unannounced was going to join us for the interview. I was ready for anything, I suppose.
Yeah. Surprise!
Yeah, we got another person coming right on in. This is going to be a good time.
A little freaked out when Ricardo had mentioned this had happened once prior. And
that yeah.
There was a known ghost, extraterrestrial living somewhere in the building.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I almost killed myself snowmobiling behind our house. Remember that?
Oh.
And I had to try to tell my husband that I got jumped back there when I came back and I had snow all stuck in my hair because I was only going back there real quick without my helmet on, so I could just be like, yeah, remember those guys that jumped me back in the gravel pits when I accidentally crashed your snowmobile? They keep trying to come in our garage now.
Took them out with a scissor kick.
With my katana.
Oh man. Well, as I said, we're here with Matt, and he's going to talk to us about what he does. He's also on the CISM or CISM team with Kent County. But you started out as a dispatcher, correct? How did you get into that?
That's correct. To take you even back a little bit further, mm-hmm. my background actually starts off in the fire service. When I was 13 years old, my parents had heard of this program, Explorer program, at one of the local fire departments. Mm-hmm. And they introduced me to a few people, and the fire department was gracious enough to forge my date of birth so that I could start a year early in the process. So
committing crimes already.
Wow.
That's awesome.
I had 5 years of Explorer experience instead of most people have four, apparently. So we went through the Explorers when I became 18. I was still, of course, it was in my blood at that point, loving what I was doing. They take you right out on calls. When you're 14, 15 years old, you ride in the trucks.
It's got to be the coolest thing for a 14-year-old.
Yes.
You're just doing thumbs up out the window the whole time.
Check me out.
This guy.
So basically 18 years old at that point, it was kind of a no-brainer for me. I knew I was going to keep doing this. Mm-hmm. So the department hired me on at that point, went through first responder training, then EMT training, and then started, at 18, I was definitely getting through with high school, trying to figure out where I was going with college.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And psychology was where it was for me. And part of the reason I think I became interested in psychology was because of some of the things that I had seen at the fire department. 15 years old, just to give you an idea. We had a crash right out in front of the airport over here in Grand Rapids. And it was a rollover crash, and there was a lady who died in the crash. And so 15 years old, I'm standing there holding the blanket, you know, as they're trying to remove the body from the car.
That's nuts.
And I tell you, you know, there is no handbook for how to deal with something like that.
Exactly.
15. You know, you've had relatives in your life that, you know, maybe have passed and whatnot. But when you see kind of the traumatic or the sudden end of that at such a young age, you really have to develop your own pathway through it. And that's what I think really got me interested in psychology, especially as it pertained to these emergency responders. So I knew that I you know, knew that I was going to be going into college for psychology, and I did, and I loved it. And I started, you know, doing some more with the fire department on the weekends. I was coming back and forth. And then I learned of a team, you know, called the Midwest Michigan CISM team, or CISM team, Critical Incident Stress Management. And I thought, hey, I'll give it a try. And so I did that. I met with these guys. I remember the first call out that I had with that team. I was, I think, 19 or 20 years old. And I remember I was being asked to sit in a circle with aeromed physicians, pilots, emergency department physicians, unit drivers, paramedics, firefighters, and police officers, all sitting around this room waiting for, you know, this all this wealth of information that I could provide to them about this traumatic incident that they had just gone through.
At 19 years old.
So my hands are shaking. I mean, my palms are sweating.
Yeah, I can imagine.
My heart about to leap out of my chest. And it was a humbling moment for me to really realize that, you know what, there was something that we could do for these people to kind of help them through what was going on. So that's kind of where that whole thing started. The decision to go into dispatch was actually medically oriented in part. I had an infection in my hip when I was a kid, and the surgeon told me, hey, you need to look for a sedentary employment. And so that was kind of contrary to kicking indoors and carrying people on my shoulder. You know, all the stuff that I had wanted to do. So to stay in the emergency world in a sedentary way, I had to find, you know, one of few of those positions. And at an entry level, it's, you know, that's kind of what steered me over towards dispatch.
Wow.
So I got my degree. I came back out of college and started looking for jobs. This one was attractive to me because I had been on the other end of the radio the entire time and listened to what the dispatchers. I was always fascinated, always took the dispatch tour whenever it was offered. Just really interesting to me. And so that's kind of where this got its genesis. That's where I started.
Yeah, that's awesome because, you know, the fact that you always volunteered to go into dispatch to look at everything because, you know, there are some and it's not talking bad of anybody at all, but there's some, you know, officers or other agencies that really, you know, they don't want to go through, you know, dispatch. They don't want to see everything else. They're interested, but they don't ever come in. So that's really cool that, you know, you wanted to actually do that to get in there.
Right. Ricardo and I, we had gone out to lunch with our director yesterday after we did a presentation, and we had mentioned to her, in Allegan at least, we're required to do a ride along. You know, we have to do one ride along a year. Usually some of us will do it more. Now that our staffing level's up, we have the opportunity. If there's five of us on and there's only three people for minimum staffing, one of us will go ride around for a little bit. But I had said when we were talking, I said, why don't the deputies have to come in like once a year? Maybe not a full 12 hours.
Right.
But why don't they have
at
to come in?
Just a 4 hour or something.
Just a 4 hour
maybe
shift.
Maybe even two. But yeah,
and
4 hour at least.
Why we do what we do on our end, because we always have to be understanding why they do things the way that they do them on their end. So that's really good.
It works both ways.
Yeah. Come on, guys.
You know, it's timely that you guys are talking. We just this week, we're starting to bring this question up internally. We require it of our interns when they come in. They have to do, you know, some sit-alongs and dispatch and whatnot. The Citizens Academy, we have a component there. You know, we deal with a lot of these things on some of the peripheral elements, but the actual line officers typically.
What in the world?
I don't know how they made it this long without somebody, you know, queuing into this.
Just saying, excuse me.
Yeah.
And that's nice because you're more kind of in an admin role right now. So it's nice to hear your perspective too. We can all say it sitting there in dispatch and be like, come on, if this guy was up here, he'd know exactly why I'm doing
it
this way.
Why I have to tell him, go to lean and stand by.
Exactly. Because I have to take another pizza roll bite. Just give me a minute. Right. Just kidding.
Yeah. Our feet are not up on the console 24/7, right? Contrary to public belief.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, a good thing though, and this also came up at the lunch that we had with our director. There's an officer who works with us who has been listening to every single one of these episodes. So he himself has been learning a lot more about this. And
we get a lot of feedback from him often.
It's been really good. That's so great. You know, hopefully it keeps going that, you know, a lot of more, you know, officers and other people in emergency services, as well as the public, of course, because that's why, you know, we're doing this, is so that people can learn more.
Absolutely.
Can you remember any of the first calls you took when you first got into dispatch there?
I remember at least one funny one. It was probably within the first maybe 2 or 3 years of us being there. I take this 911 call. It was for a person had just come home to their condominium, and they noticed that there's glass all over the floor. They could hear a bunch of thrashing around going on down in the basement, and there was blood just streaked all over the walls and all over the floor of the house.
Whoa. And you said this one was a funny one.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So we'll get to that.
Yeah.
So we send the world. I mean, we
lights and sirens screaming in there.
Within the first probably 15 minutes, we had probably close to 9 cars on scene. And they're all setting up on this house.
Getting a perimeter and everything.
We don't know what we have yet, type of thing. And so the officers go in to do an entry and they hear something going in. They're yelling out verbal commands. Nobody's coming out, but you know, the blood was very concerning to them. They felt they needed to go in and find out what was going on. They get to the stairwell of the basement and they start moving down the stairwell, and right past them goes a white-tailed deer.
Nice.
So here we are, you know.
What?
Later.
Yeah. Get him! Running.
So, you know, the calls that you're dispatched to are not necessarily always the calls that you find when you get to the scene.
That's the truth.
That may have been an element.
And what a great learning experience, though, just to modify your questions, because you know you ask, okay, there's blood in the house, get out,
right?
But if they're already out, safe or whatever, you could ask them, is your whole slider blown out maybe? Right. Like,
Is it, did you see any fur?
Right. There are some questions.
Did you see any hoof prints on the other side of the slider?
Exactly. Right. Yeah. But yeah, that's really interesting though. You know, if you hear weird stories like that, I was in Grand Valley one time. It wasn't my classroom, but all of a sudden a turkey came flying through one of the ground floor windows. Turkey. running around. Same thing though. I mean, there's people in there, they saw it, but.
Yeah, that story there is something, a prime example of what we talked about in a past episode where, you know, no matter what kind of call you get, you never know what exactly is going on. So you have to treat it, you know, at the utmost importance every time when the call comes in.
Real
so,
until proven otherwise, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And your caller had a genuine fear. I mean, everything lined up. There was noises, there the blood everywhere.
Yeah. Especially that.
Right.
I'd be freaked out.
Exactly. What's going on downstairs?
I immediately would have started typing a lot faster and people would know, okay, something's going on because Ricardo's typing really fast, or I would repeat it. And that's another thing that, you know, we brought up in past episodes is, you know, we know when something is going on because you repeat what it is out loud so that everybody else can hear it. So you said that there's a lot of blood all over the wall. Oh.
Yeah.
How many people are dead?
Exactly. Oh,
okay. That's usually one that gets our attention.
Yeah.
You guys have a little different than we do in Kent County versus Allegan County.
Yeah.
You know, if we call out our ME once a day, then they've had a good day. We're like, hey, so-and-so's getting a paycheck today. They went out on a call, but.
Yeah, most when of the time we have a farm animal that's
right
on the road.
I hit a horse again, ma'am.
So I guess that's a good point. Just to give everybody kind of a background on the community that I come from.
Yeah.
There's 615,000 people basically in Kent County. 200,000 of those are in the city of Grand Rapids. Grand Rapids has the other 911 center within Kent County. They also dispatch for the city of Wyoming, which is another 70,000+ as well. So it's pretty, you know, it's pretty close to like a 50-50 split, really, both on the population and the call volume. It's usually 60-40 to 50-50.
So okay.
So just, you know, just some background.
That's good.
Yeah, and you know what? That's That's my fault because all of our other interviews, I've been like, okay, you're from Yakima, Washington. So I've really looked into it. Cheryl. Yeah. I figured out how far from Seattle,
right.
The other, you know, all the other one, I was trying to figure out how far they are from this place or that place or this, but Kent County, I live in Kent County.
It's our backyard.
So,
right?
Yeah. So I didn't even think anything of it. So I'm glad that you cleared that up. Yeah. Kent County is a huge portion of West Michigan. I mean, Kent County is huge. It's got Grand Rapids in it, which is kind of our seat over here in West Michigan. So I'm glad that Matt cleared that up.
How many people do you guys have in just your communication center with that many people and everything else?
So our population served is?
Yeah.
Our split is, I think, 320,000. I think we have a little bit more population, but a little less call volume. Grand Rapids and Wyoming, a little bit more urban, so their call volume is actually higher per capita than what our
And then is. How many people do you guys have working at a time in the center?
So our minimum staff is 8 people on at any given time.
Man.
That includes basically 5 radio dispatchers, a lean operator, a supervisor, and then a couple call takers.
You know, so you have 5 radio dispatchers.
Mm-hmm. Man.
See, and I understand in Allegan we have multiple call takers and we have 1 radio dispatcher.
Right.
How does that work? Do you dispatch by section? Do you have like a precinct dispatcher for each area? Or?
We have areas. Basically for us, we kind of draw a line right through the center of the county and we have a north and a south police channel.
Oh.
We recently went through some consolidations within the county. So we brought in some other cities, Granville and Walker. Mm-hmm. We have them on a separate police channel. Basically because the 2 that we had were already saturated at the time that we took these.
That makes sense.
So, you know, that dispatcher has lower work-related radio traffic to deal with. They kind of help out at some point with answering some phones if they get past the call takers. The fire dispatchers are the same way. They kind of double as call takers as long as their call volume can allow for it. Smaller counties, you don't have a choice. I mean, you're 1 or 2 people in the room. That's it. You're call taking and dispatching around the clock.
Yeah.
We're kind of in the middle of that. You know, there's some larger centers that have absolutely dedicated staff that they will not ever pick up the phone when it comes in. You know, we're kind of a hybrid in between just based on our size and call volume.
That's interesting to hear. I never thought about that, but you're right. If your channel's already so full with radio traffic, you can't smash 3 more departments on there.
Well, you can try.
Yeah, you can. You're walking over each other and bonking at each other.
Not well advised.
Yeah. So you'd been talking about the CISM or CISM team and everything else, and we wanted to bring you on because we had such good feedback from the last episode that we had with Cheryl from Yakima, Washington, that we wanted to bring you on and, you know, give people a little more, I guess, just build up on more of what you do. So I guess if you can go a little more into how it works.
So really, I mentioned the first team that I joined. That was the Midwest Michigan team. And,
right.
And we, you know, cover a large portion of West Michigan. Can be a lot of traveling. I'll tell you, most of the calls that we have for that team are usually within Kent County.
Really?
Yeah, it just seems to be wherever the calls are.
Right.
Generally. So if the more densely populated areas, you get more calls. Several years ago, probably 2 or 3 years ago, we developed our own team internal to the Sheriff Department.
Right.
So there's a Kent County peer support team as well. And we have recently been ramping up a lot of the training that we are doing with the other teams in the area. We're starting to meet more collaboratively. And so there's some really good momentum going on here. And essentially what the CISM teams do, there's several components to it. Again, I think, you know, your prior podcast kind of dealt with some of these, so I'll race through them real quick.
Okay.
Quite honestly, most of what I do is a crisis management briefing, and that is letting the people know who are somewhat peripheral to what the critical incident was, letting them know what's going on, what's being dealt with as far as, you know, what they can expect to see from their coworkers that actually went through the hard part, and just kind of bring them up to speed and give them an idea. And we've had some pretty challenging events within Kent County in the last few years. In 07, Grand Rapids had the murder of Officer Kosminski.
Right, yeah.
Tragic.
I happened to be the night shift supervisor at the Sheriff Department when that incident happened. And so, we kind of walked through the peripheral role with that. But then just a couple of years ago, Officer Slott from Walker PD killed in the line of duty when he was struck while trying to lay spike strips to some bank robbers that were trying to flee. So that happened while I was in the center. I can still, you know, I can remember all the faces of all of my staff at that time looking around that room, and it brings me right. I mean, it's a flashbulb memory for me. I could tell you everything that you wanted to know about the wind speed, the temperature.
I believe it.
Yeah, exactly.
What you were wearing, what you,
Yeah, it's such a huge event and everything. Of course, I would be, you know, stuck there.
So just to give you an idea on that, you know, we obviously knew that we needed to what we call demobilize. Most of emergency responders are out in the field. So the demobilize term came from that, basically get them off of their shift so that you can kind of walk through with them what they can expect over the next few hours.
Right.
So the demobilization was something that we ran into right away. That was my first mission. I lucked out. I had an entire room full of dispatchers just down the hall that were helping to get the training material ready for the new CAD system that we were
running.
Convenient.
I mean, you know, talk about silver lining. I would not have been able to manage that nearly as well without each and every one of those guys. I just pulled them all in, explained to them what was going on. They all nodded and they went right to it and they started relieving people one after the other.
Great.
Put a couple pages out and had people just flooding in because by that time they were seeing it on the news and they needed to be involved in it. So once they're demobilized, then you can move into a defusing. And a defusing is basically, you know, you don't get into all the really deep stuff because they haven't really emotionally gone through that.
No.
Essentially what it is basically they're dealing right now with an event that is more than what they, you know, were built to handle.
Right.
It's more taxing to them than what they can manage on their own. A lot of shock is what, you know, we deal with in this time. Yeah. Just long faces, like, you know, a lot of a lot of crying. You know, we basically get them into a room where we can kind of walk through a couple of the early phases, which is mostly education. We just want them to understand what's going to happen or what could happen in the next 12 to 18 hours. Give them an idea on some of the, you know, things that might happen with sleep, you know, just some of the stressing things, you know, some of the flashback memories that they may have, the associations that they, if it was a child that died as a critical incident, you know, they might go home and hug their kids to the point where their kid turns blue.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, all normal things. And they need to understand that that's normal when it happens so that they don't start second guessing their ability to either keep doing their job or just function as a person. So, diffusings are absolutely huge. And that's when I started in 95, doing SISM work, diffusings were out there, but not really well utilized.
No, you hear of debriefings more is what you
use. Right. Yeah,
let's talk about it.
Yep. So just to give an, you know, idea, we did the diffusing right after Officer Slott's line of duty death. You know, there was still a lot of long faces after that. We knew that that was going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, they're not done. They're just beginning this process of working through what just happened. Many of my staff knew him personally. One of my staff was a very close friend, actually worked for the fire department in the same town. It was very difficult and different. You know, his experience with this is different.
So much more personal.
Than every other one of, you know, my staff. You know, another one, her husband was this officer's partner, at, you know, working for the police department, same police department. Another one of my staff also worked on the fire department, knew him, you know, from years and years of working fire and police next to him. So, you know, we had to consider all those things as we walked through that process. Very, very challenging.
And I commend you for that because that's such a unique thing. You can't just get a guy like a handbook and read through it and say, this is how I'm going to help my coworkers. You have to be so skilled and you have to have such a, kind of a soft heart to be able to envelope each person how they need to be, but not be too pushy.
Well, and I'll tell you that, you know, I'm sure that we made mistakes along the way too. I mean, there, I guess the thought that I have on it is that it's such a complex, challenging moment that you're just trying to do whatever help that you can to try to minimize the damage, knowing full well that this was an incident that by its very definition is something more than what people are trained to handle.
Right.
Right.
So just trying to do whatever you can, you know, to step in and help these people that just went through something that is really unimaginable prior to it actually happening. Mm-hmm. You just don't think that these things are going to happen. Even if in the back of your mind somewhere you always wonder what it would happen if it were us.
Well, this is what we do for a job. We know that death happens and it's unexpected most of the time. Mm-hmm. And especially when you're working in law enforcement or, you know, EMS and fire too, they put themselves in a risky situation every single day. We know it's going to happen. But when it happens, especially a line of duty death, is just so, you know, because you're sending them MCT messages 10 minutes before whatever. It's just
out of the ordinary. And like, you know, Whitney was saying, you know, commending you being the right type of, you know, person to do with the job that you do. About a year ago, we had a very good friend of ours, and he was a sergeant with the sheriff's department in Allegan who passed away unexpectedly. And, you know, you came in and you didn't get in our face. You know, you didn't start saying, hey, do you need to, you know, you weren't all in our face. You know, you just kind of walked around, asked us a couple of questions here and there. And it was great to have you come in. And while we were working, because we were actually rather busy when you had come in that time.
Yes, you were.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, dealing with that, the shock of it all. And, you know, and it wasn't an actual line of duty death, but, you know, it was still
death. You know, unexpected.
Yeah, because we hung out with him. You know, we went to parties and family get togethers and everything else. We were, you know, he was that close to us. So that shock that you're talking about, that's where we were all at that time. So,
and we, you know, we processed it at a different level. I actually happened to be getting relieved by a coworker, and I'm so thankful that it happened the way it did, because when the 911 call came in, I went to grab the phone and my partner said, he said, no, get out of here. Get out of here. You know, it's time for you to roll. And I was like, no, I can get one more. He's like, leave. You've had a long day. And I'm so thankful he took the 911 call, because, you know, I still...
Yeah. So we thank you for coming in that day to be able to, you know, talk to us, even though it was briefly, it was just, I don't know, just the way you approached it. Yeah. It was excellent. So we thank you for that. And that's another reason why we wanted you to come on, because you made that kind of impression on us. So thank you.
Yeah. Right. I told Ricardo, I said, I just really remember that Matt, remember that guy that was here right after, you know, our sergeant's death. And he said, yeah, I said, he was just so quiet about his job and he wasn't pushy. And I just really think that people need to understand that SISM in my mind was somebody that came in and said, why don't you tell me what's wrong? You're going to be okay. Let's work our way through it.
Right,
you're okay.
Yeah.
And I just, I like to kind of go through things on my own and process at my own speed. And I don't really like to do big group ones because I like to do it on my own. So yeah, I mean, if you just want to talk about that.
Well, I think, you know, some of the method that we have adopted over time is basically don't make assumptions. Don't walk in assuming that they're at a place that you've got some special skill to come and deal with. Spend more time listening to what's going on than you do talking. Mm-hmm. And be there because, you know, really, if you think about it, when you're trying to decompress from something big that just happened to you and is a personal threat to your, you know, either feeling of safety or feeling, you know, of, you know, I don't know how to describe it, I guess.
But I got it.
Death brings with it a lot of issues. Mm-hmm. And some people deal with the individual components of death differently. Some people, they'll focus on, like, you know, like I said, the child component. If it was a child, they will not see past that. You know, in many cases, if they are the parent of a young child or a child that exact same age or looks similar, you don't know where those triggers are until mm-hmm. you listen to these people and start to understand what their perspective is. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that it came across that way.
Yeah.
You know, that's the last thing that we want to do is to go into a situation assuming that we know what you're going through. We really don't. What we were there to do is to provide you a pathway to get through what you're doing based on some stuff that we know works.
Oh, that's definitely great. And I had a question. I had a supervisor meeting yesterday, and they brought up this pamphlet. The sheriff's department has their own type of a SISM type team, and they were wondering if we had anybody in dispatch who wanted to take part in it. Well, my question to you is: do you think is it better to have a dispatcher within our own department to be part of that team to talk to us, or is it better to have someone out of the agency?
That's a great question. I think it depends on several factors, but mm-hmm. what I will say is that it is always good to have people from within the dispatch center who mm-hmm. bring that knowledge set to the table, because who's the last to get invited to a debriefing?
Right. The dispatcher. Right. The first person to yep. take that and start working through that.
If for no other reason to be the advocate for the other people in that room that need that help, and mm-hmm. we all need that help. If
right.
you think mm-hmm. that you don't, you're on my radar screen, because, you know, I mean, that's just,
yeah.
Everybody needs to have a path to get the, you know, through incidents that they can't even fathom right now. So having a dispatcher involved in that process keeps everything in unison. And that's absolutely key to getting any program mm-hmm. moving and to not leave these guys behind.
Right.
What I'll also say is that part of the reason we're collaborating in Kent County with the other teams right now is for just that reason. Are we too close? Sometimes you don't debrief your own people. It's one of the things that, you know, gets taught in the Mitchell model, which is what we follow for mm-hmm. CISM. And, you know, you have to take the resources that you have available and use
right.
them to the best. You know, a lot of counties that are further out, you know, mm-hmm. from major metropolitan areas, there may only be one team per county, or maybe one team per two or three counties.
Yeah.
You may not have the luxury of having another team come and deal
right.
at that
right.
point. So to the extent possible, involve the dispatch center. Absolutely. It has proven critical to our success, to the internal sheriff department team, but really to the larger team, to the Midwest Michigan team. Just knowing that we need to invite the dispatchers as well was a major step forward for us.
Especially because as a dispatcher, you almost become a sounding board for the guys out on the men and women out on the road.
Yep.
You know, you kind of will talk about it, the good stuff, the bad stuff, the ugly stuff. Yeah. You find yourself, I mean, I don't know, do you guys do a lot of MCT messaging back and forth? Do you have that, or do you not
no.
have that anymore?
No, we do.
Yeah. yeah. Some, I don't know, I forget what department just said that they don't do that anymore. I don't know if it's Van Buren.
I don't remember which one, but I know that
there's a county around us that they took that away because somebody blew it and whatever. Mm-hmm. But we have it where, and it's good for relaying information. Hey, so-and-so just called for you. Can you call him back on this number sure. instead yeah. of that number? But yeah, I think you're right, though. Having a dispatcher in there and involved in that whole process just puts one more, I don't know what word I want to use, just one more piece out there, one yeah. more piece of help. Or
it's, mm-hmm. it's another perspective for the road responders who may have developed a picture in their mind on what we were told as call takers or dispatchers and how they only got a certain amount of that.
Right.
Well, if we are able to present to them what we were actually told, a lot of times it starts making better sense to them, you know, that they shouldn't develop animosity towards the dis. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is how it happens. It's a disconnect, and it's not going to happen anytime more than when there is a critical incident, something that that we couldn't stop from happening, and it went bad.
Right.
You know, I mean, a lot of responders have this rescue mentality built into them. I will, you know, I wear a cape, and I will go out to the scene,
yeah.
and I will stop this from happening. We're fixers. That's why we're all in this job. And if we can't fix the problem, if somebody mm-hmm. still dies, especially a child, especially a loved one of ours,
right.
especially mm-hmm. one of our team members, mm-hmm. then somehow we have failed. And that perception develops into anger if you let it. And this is one of the ways that you let it, by not involving every last part of the puzzle to make sure that they understand what really happened. Develop that perspective. Comes back to what we're talking about with having the road officers sit in the dispatch center so that they understand that perspective.
Yeah. Keep it full circle.
Proactively.
Exactly. Yeah. You know? That's good.
Yeah. And actually, with that said, you know, we are actually, we're trying to raise a little money so that we can get a few more microphones, because what we want to do in that sense of keeping it, you know, all, we want to do a mixed panel episode where we end up having someone from police, fire, and EMS, and, you know, another agency come in, and we do an episode where we talk it and lay it all out so that people really understand how it works. It's probably going to be rather interesting.
And you said lay it all out. I don't want to say like I'm yelling at fire for doing this, or I'm yelling yeah. at what it is. No. This still is going to be a dispatch focused show. This right. is mm-hmm. going to be a show
yeah,
for dispatchers to listen and say, you know, these are my people talking about my problems. But we want, the reason why we want a road officer, and, you know, police, fire, and EMS with us is because we want we want them to be able to talk it through and say, you know, this is why dispatch is so important to us. Mm-hmm. And this is how we utilize dispatch. And we understand why you run into that problem because, you know, you don't get that closure or you don't get that correct information right in the beginning of the call or that kind of stuff. So we, it's, this is a dispatch show, but we have a huge population of listeners who just listen, not because they're a dispatcher, because they think it's interesting. So we want them to hear.
Yep.
Right.
You know what the officers say.
We want the public to, dispatch to see how it really works.
Dispatch is always a part of the emergency response community. So I applaud you for bringing these guys all together. I just recommend that you check the weapons at the door.
No kidding. Right. Exactly. Have a little gun clear. You need to clear your weapons there, sir.
Range master.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll, let's see if we want to have county and state sitting next to each other or on the other side.
No, why don't we do those separate?
Right.
Separate.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. But on that note, we're going to go ahead and wrap this episode number 13. And thank you very, very much, Matt, for coming in.
You hold a really dear spot in, you know, Ricardo and I's hearts because of the really important role that you played in a really just traumatic time in our lives. So we thank you for that too.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. So as always, you can get a hold of us on both emails, the jcast@thejabberlog.com, as well as wttpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @Jabberlog, and everything will be posted up probably later today on thejabberlog.com. Have a good time, everybody.
Bye. You just listened to Within the Trenches on the JCast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to thejcast@thejabberlog.com.